The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Where do you stand as a leader? Are there things you would change about your business or organization? Welcome to What's Leadership Got to Do with It with your host, Rick Thiemann. Together, we'll explore the five dynamics that exist in every workplace, as well as answer some of your leadership questions. Now, here's your host, Rick Thiemann.
Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to the show, and good morning to you on the West Coast. It's still morning. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. I'm with the Executive Group. My firm is called the Executive Group, and you can reach us on our website at www.theeg.com for the EG and find out more about our products and services and what we do. We're an organizational consulting firm, works in the world of organizational development. We've been in business for 20 years, and the show is based on the premise of the book, which should be available for publication here in the next month or so. And the book is also called What's Leadership Got to Do with It? And the book follows five fundamental components of what I think it takes to run a business and operate a business. And those five chapters outline each of the, what I refer to as the fundamental five. Now, none of the chapters focus on leadership, as per se, because I believe that leadership must focus on kind of what goes into operating a business, and that's its culture, the individual performers, the group dynamics, the business dynamics, and the structure of the business is how the book's formatted. And if you've been following the show, if you haven't been, if you're a first-time listener, welcome to the show. If you've been following the show, you'll know that, traditionally speaking, I've had guests on the show other than last week. I did not have a guest, and I'm not going to this week either, because this week is going to be a continuation of last week's show in the world of the kind of the interview process. So we're going to follow the same format from last week, but then we'll be back to our guests again on the show. I believe next week is the format. But the show today is incorporated into the kind of the interviewing and selection process, and it really follows the one-day workshop we do called A Strategic View of Hiring. And the premise behind the show and the work that we do in the work around selection and hiring and interviewing has to do with our approach, that is that it's a behavioral-based approach that must understand how competencies tie into the whole interview process. But I spoke last week about assessment and using assessments, and I also talked at the beginning of the show last week about what I think goes into having a successful hiring program, and that is you've just got to have a really, really strong job analysis process and a strong set of job descriptions that outline what you're going to look for in terms of your hiring. Secondly, you've got to have a strong screening process from your sourcing and recruitment to how you screen your resumes to how you do your phone screens to save yourself time from bringing candidates in that aren't worthy of bringing in based on how you screen in the beginning. The third part is a strong interview process, and we're going to talk about those things today. The fourth thing is a strong assessment process, which we spoke to last week. And then the last thing is having a strong reference checking process, what I refer to as validating references, with something I've developed over the years that's different from checking references and it's validating references. And we probably won't get time to get into that today in any depth, but we do have it available in our workshop. But along with the world of hiring, one of the things that I have seen in 20 years of consulting and prior to that 20 years of being in business, I found that I hear many managers or many HR managers say, I know a good one when I see one, or I'm a pretty good judge of character. And it's my philosophy that upon promotion into management, one becomes mystically endowed with all the traits necessary to hire and create a team that gets the job done is a huge fallacy. And our ability to judge people, especially in something that's about an hour long, as most interviews are, how can you really be a good judge of character and identify a good one when you see one? in a 1 hour interview remains totally baffling to me. But nonetheless, there's people who believe that and say that and tout that as their ability to hire people. There was a quote I came across a long time ago by Peter Drucker. Was in the Harvard Business Review, and it said executives spend more time on managing people and making people decisions than on anything else. No other decisions are so lasting and their consequences are so difficult to unmake. And yet, by and large, executives make poor promotion and staffing decisions. By all accounts, their batting average is no better than one out of three. One out of three such decisions turn out right, one out of three are minimally effective, and one out of three are outright failures. And in no other area of management will we put up with such miserable performance. And nothing could be further from the truth. And in my experience of hiring, working with companies in the last 20 years and in the process we use, I think one of the biggest things that interviewers make the mistake of is a very simple fact, and that is there's a pure difference between why we hire and why we fire. And what I mean by that is that we hire based on experience, education, perceived skills, interpersonal chemistry, thinking that we really like this person and we could work well with them. Those are the reasons why we wind up hiring. The problem lies in that those are the reasons why we interview or how we interview or what we interview to or what we interview for. But the real reason is that we should change that philosophy methodology is because we fire for a whole different set of reasons. We fire for attitude. We fire for behavior. We fire for lack of interpersonal skills. We fire for performance. We fire for defiance. We fire for job incompetence. We fire for lack of results. And those are the reasons why we fire people. Yet we don't hire to those dimensions. And in the process that I use and that I promote, and it's kind of in our workshop, it's really geared around understanding that hiring has to really be driven toward understanding the behavior of the individual and the capabilities that an individual brings to the table, their level of competencies, and the significant accomplishments that they can speak to that resonate, that they can, in fact, deliver the same kind of results. But as you hire people and you bring them in and you may be promoting them into a higher level position where they come from, you've got to be careful that just because that past performance doesn't necessarily suggest that new role they're going to be as successful in or changing industries. So those things come into play, and that if we recognize to change our hiring process to really look at the behavioral aspect and understanding the competencies, and we're going to talk about a structured interview today and how that comes into play with building a better process, if you will, for around selection. Well, the reality of hiring goes beyond that then, and that is how can you expect to gain all the information out of an individual in 1 hour without having some type of structured way in which you're going about evaluating things. And I think that another thing that comes into play is the reality of hiring comes from the standpoint, that is, we're under pressure to fill a position. Typically, most managers don't interview enough to be competent or even comfortable. You suffer, or most organizations I've seen suffer from inadequate questioning techniques or perhaps poor analysis of the job function. Sometimes there's poor analysis of the skills and behaviors. The problem is first impressions or poor utilization of second opinions. Job expectations are overly or inappropriately sold. And even references not properly checked or validated or even checked at all if they are. And so what goes into a strong hiring process is having a way to make sure your job descriptions are current and up to date. And that's a huge piece, I think, that sets the stage for being able to hire more effectively and hire against a set of criteria, and that is really doing the due diligence. And one of the things that's on the market that if you have it available or if you've used it is called a PAQ. And a PAQ is a position analysis questionnaire, and it's highly recommended to be used in terms of establishing your kind of your job position in the organization and your job descriptions. We worked with an automotive plant that had a 14% turnover, and in a year's time, we took that 14% to 6% and saved over $150,000 in hiring costs in the first year. And one of the things we identified through the use of the PAQ was that they were using 7 different assessments to measure certain competencies in the organization. And when we did the PAQ results, the PEQ back came back and showed that there's actually zero correlation with the ability to predict performance based on the assessments that they were using. And to save a lot of time, for the sake of time, I don't have time to go into all that, but the PEQ is a structured way to look at job competencies. And in its ability to help you then map out what you're looking for to create job descriptions, there are 195 questions that the PEQ has available in it. And it looks at how information is received. It looks at the mental processes a person goes through. It looks at work output. It looks at relationships with other people. It looks at other job characteristics. It looks at job content, working conditions, written communication, hand communication, oral communication. It looks at body positions. It just looks at everything to include responsibility, job demands, whether it's a night job or a day job or the criticalness of the position or pay or income. It covers so many things to help you audit and evaluate the job that you're trying to look at filling and the requirements behind that. And it will help you then create a much more robust job description. It's a lot of legwork, but it really helps then drive a quality job description if you're looking to really bolster what it is you're doing in your organization. If you don't want to do anything that sophisticated, that's fine. Just find a way to make sure that you have a very strong job description written so that you start, because your job description feeds in the ad that you write, it feeds in the interview questions, the job description is going to have the competencies that you need. The competencies are critical and part of the interview process, which we'll speak to later on in the show. But the piece is that we're going to talk about a structured interview that then helps you set the stage. And in that structured interview, beyond just a behavioral interview, the structured interview helps stay away from making quick decisions. It helps stay away from overemphasizing negative information. It helps stay away from interviewers who may be too lenient or maybe interviewers who are too strict. And it also helps us stay away from stereotyping. So the less we're inclined to make those kind of decisions and be more open-minded and use a process, it walks us through a process, we're going to be much more comfortable in our ability to make better selections. So as we get ready to take our first break, I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It. Our focus today is on the interview process and helping create a strong, robust interview process. If you've got questions, call us at 866-472-5790 or email me at rick@theig.com, and we'll be glad to answer your questions. And we'll see you back after the break.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hello, I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. Welcome back to the show, What's Leadership Got to Do with It? You're listening to the VoiceAmerica.com radio station, internet radio. And we're back talking about interviewing and the selection process. And as we look at kind of where I left off with the first part of the show, I was talking about structured interviews and the difference between a behavioral-based interview and a structured interview, and some of the behavioral-based interviews that are out there we'll speak to, but where they fall short. But as you look at then creating that structured interview, you know, you've got different positions in the organization you're hiring for, whether it's your plant manager role, whether it's a sales role, whether it's an accounting role or an auditing role or customer service role. As you look at those different roles, each of those roles takes on different elements and different competencies. And what you're looking to do is create the competencies out of your job description, and then help drive that into your interview process. Well, as you look at that structured interview that I talked about, the problem with it then lies in, if quick decisions are made, it involves what that interviewer is making the first few minutes of that interview and kind of basing their opinions, and then they spend the time and the remaining time of the interview gathering information to justify their decision rather than continuing to probe for information that helps them see if they've got the right candidate. Overemphasizing negative information refers to giving greater weight to negative information than positive information, and then automatically discounting the candidate because something popped up that didn't sound quite right instead of exploring that to a deeper level. Leniency refers to a tendency of some interviewers to be easy on all candidates, whereas an over exemplifying degree of strictness is the opposite tendency. Stereotyping then takes place when an interviewer makes a decision about a candidate based on candidate's membership in a particular group, whether it be ethnic or age or male or female, or for particular job qualifications that they come from. But what we found is that research suggests that without some type of structured interview, there's a very, very low correlation, no more than 0.10 to 0.35, was a study done by an organization called Conway and Goodman in 1995, and then Hunter and Hunter did another study in 1984 that really validated the fact that unless you have some type of structured interview process evolving, your odds of hiring high-end quality individuals probably becomes diminished. But as you look at that, then, once you've got the process, as we move into the screening component of what goes on in your hiring process, the screening component takes on a huge significance as well. And what I mean by that is once you begin to get your resumes in and you start to sort your resumes, it's quite interesting as we work with organizations how much is missed in the resume process and how much is misunderstood in the resume process is always an interesting component piece. For those clients who are listening, they'll have a high appreciation for this, but for those who have never worked with us in this capacity, oftentimes we're brought in to evaluate candidates using the assessments that we use and help clients kind of debrief what the assessments speak to about the individual. And in that process, we always demand that we see the resume as well because I'm not involved in interviewing the candidate per se live. Sometimes clients will have me do a live interview with them based on my experience. But for the most part, I sit down with clients and discuss the resume and the job description and the job fit and the test results and the background information and provide input and insight from my perspective of what I see is there. And that resume is a huge piece that I ask clients to provide. And it's always interesting that there's things that I ask my clients when we work through this process about certain things that I pick up out of the resume that they didn't catch before, they didn't see or they didn't know to look at that or they hadn't explored that in any depth. And one of the kind of most unique examples I ever came across was one of my clients, the owner, asked me to come in and help his new sales manager recruit three new salespeople as they were expanding their business. The client had been working with for a long time. So when I went into the sales manager's office, I said, so how many people have you interviewed? And he said, I've interviewed 17. And I said, 17? He said, yeah. And I said, well, do you mind if I look at the resumes? As I'm fumbling through the resumes and kind of picking things out, I said, now how many do you think you're looking to bring back? He said, there's probably about three or four, maybe even five, that I thought I would probably bring back. As I looked through the resumes, I handed him four resumes, and I said, are you looking to bring back any of these four? He said, I'm looking to bring back three of the four. And so the point is that the time wasted by interviewing 17 individuals, and what he did was he just gave that list to his secretary and said, you know, set up interviews with these people, had them come in. Well, that's 17 hours, bare minimum of his time. And with a proper screening process, we could have eliminated that to a couple hours. But nonetheless, that speaks to experience versus inexperience. But one of the things that is critical about resumes that it's a really important thing to point out, and that is that I read a resume from back to front. Most people read a resume from front to back. There's a reason why I do that. But the fact of the matter is resumes, if you keep in mind, they are really a self-proclaimed, unaudited balance sheet without the liabilities. And you'll find that probably 20 to 25% of the resumes likely contain inaccuracies, meaning they've kind of fudged it. Also, candidates may not be experts or presenting themselves on paper. And does that make them more or less qualified? You know, it depends on the role. Also, you got to be careful that resumes are written by headhunters. They're rarely audited, and they're written to sell the candidate. So those things are critical pieces to look at in a resume. But another thing is that in looking at resumes, you've got to look for the gaps in a resume. In other words, when they list dates, year to year versus month to year. So a 7 of 77 to a 10 of 97 certainly designates almost 20 years of service. But when there's gaps, there could be as much as a 2-year gap in that if I list from a year-to-year date, so if I list from 2007 to 2010, and then it was I hired in January of 2007 and worked all the way through December of 2010, or was I hired in December of 2007 and let go in January of 2010, there's a 2-year window gap there that if you don't ferret that out, you're going to miss a lot. And those are the kinds of questions that are just small things that you've got to try to pinpoint. Well, in looking at a resume, you've got to identify the key factors of the applicant. It ties back to your job description. Are there experiences that have been acquired in a comparable setting? Does the applicant have the breadth and depth of experience? Does the resume indicate accomplishments versus results? Can't tell you how many resumes I see that just looks like a duties list rather than an accomplishments list. And then, again, I mentioned I read the resume from back to front because I want to see the progression of how that person came to where they are into where they've been or where they've come from to where they are today and how they've gotten there and the sequence to which that's evolved. And I want to interview to that. Well, most people interview front to back, first job to second, maybe third job, and it's as far as they get. I want to take the progression through to see how they progress, and I'm also going to drive income out of that resume so I can look at the progression of income and results. But the gaps in the resume are a critical thing. Reading resumes with a highlighter, checking for gaps. Another thing is there more space given to previous dates than current dates. You see this a lot when people have job hopped or been let go and they all of a sudden they just grab a job because they needed a job. And in so doing, they grab that job and realize when they got in there that, you know, while they needed a job and needed some money, it's not the job that they wanted, so they go back and look again. Well, they wind up then staying for a while, but then what's their level of accomplishments? Do they have their heart in the job? What's going on there? Those are kinds of questions that as I glean the resume and start to spend more time reading the resume, I can start to pick out, back to my comment earlier, and that is the reason between why we hire and why we fire. I want to see the history behind an individual on the why we fire side to look at behavior and all those things being equal. And as I look at test results then, a person's assessment results, I get more information from the assessment results. I get more information from the resume. Then I can start to drive my interview questions that can help me expand upon my structured interview that I have to help me do a better job of ferreting those things out. So the last thing, though, that the people don't tend to pay much attention to, and that is the note-taking thing. A lot of people will write on the resume and make their notes on the resume. The problem with that is that if you make notes on a resume and their notes may be somewhat questionable or derogatory or maybe biased, that resume can be hauled into court very easily as proof of evidence if you ever get into a lawsuit. So it's highly recommended that you take notes on a separate piece of paper and not on the resume. Most people don't necessarily read that or pick up on that. One last thing is you might want to identify, is there more emphasis on education than results? So when I see a resume that's not very, if you will, heavily driven by results or accomplishments, it starts to lend a huge question to those things that come into play. Then when I start to look at reading that resume, I can start to pick up on other things that I want to pull out of there. So it's a valuable piece for me when I sit down with clients to review that component piece as far as looking at assessments on a resume. It's a huge factor that I don't think gets paid as much attention to as what could be or should be. I had mentioned that one of the clients we worked with, we saved them $150,000 in hiring costs and reduced their turnover. We're working with another client right now, a university, that has a 70% turnover in one of their admissions roles where they have over 200 people in that role. That's a huge turnover cost and how we're going to attack that. But one of the things that we, besides the doing a better job of the interview process in our approach, is the utilization of a phone screen. And many organizations don't use a phone screen. If they do, I don't think they use it to the best of their ability. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to get into the phone screen and talk briefly about my strategy behind a phone screen and what I think the value is behind that. But you've been listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It? We're in the second phase of our program on selection and hiring and interviewing. And if you listen to last week's program, you know that we spent time talking about assessments and how to blend in assessments to the process. Today we're talking about just the fundamental things that support the assessment process in terms of having a strong interview process to support your hiring and selection needs so that it helps you stay out of litigation. And we'll speak a little bit to litigation when we come back from the break. But if you listen to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, you can check us out on the web. My name is Rick Thiemann. Our website is www.theeg.com. And we look forward to having you after the break.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
No family can survive on two incomes anymore, let alone one. If you are supplementing your family's income working from home, then tune into The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio. Host Deb Bixler brings you sales tips, lead generation systems, and best business practices that guarantee direct sales success. Whether you're looking for a little extra cash or a career change, The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio will give you proven systems that will work in your home business. The Cash Flow Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back to the show. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, and we're talking about the kind of the interviewing side and the job process side of the selection process today. It's tough to do in terms of covering everything today because the workshop that we do called A Strategic View of Hiring is truly a one-day workshop that goes from 8 to 4, so it's a full day of information that I'm cramming into an hour here, but I'm trying to help listeners gauge an idea of, so what goes into a strong hiring process? One of the shows we did was called Making Sense of Testing, which helps organizations look at the different ways to use various kinds of assessments. We did two shows on leadership, which spoke to how you use assessments in the leadership process and the six things that go into a strong leadership program. Our hiring program workshop gets into the depth of what we think goes into an essential hiring program, from using the PAQ and our job analysis process and job descriptions to everything we do to include developing an outline for interviewing selection, which we'll talk about toward the end of the show. But where I left off was talking about, as we ended the second segment, was talking about resumes and the significance of using resumes and how I think that people don't pay as much attention or aren't as, maybe a better way to say is they take them too much for granted, that there's really far more in there if you really become that sleuth, if you will, to dig in and uncover what's there. There's a lot going on in that resume that can tell you a lot about the individual and kind of their background. But to help really then to the next phase as we get into that screening process that I mentioned, of being more effective at screening and bringing in the right people and saving a lot of time, it's the phone screen. And I think the phone screen, again, is a thing that is not as utilized as much as it could be or should be. I think some of that stuff is missed. But I think that what goes into a phone screen is a number of things. If you don't use it, you should. It's a real cost and time effective way. It really does set the stage for pre-screening an applicant. Additionally, don't utilize the resume to interview from. And I'll give some examples of some questions that I would use in the process, but just don't get into interviewing off the resume. Wait for that when you come in to meet that individual. And the phone screen shouldn't last more than 20 or 30 minutes. It sets the stage for validating your references, which we'll talk about at the end of the show if we have enough time to get that in there. It creates a mutual agreement to move the person to the next step. It helps qualify how serious they are. It can prepare them for what to expect. In other words, if you let them know what you do in terms of drug testing or testing per se, or the length of interview or types of interviews that they're involved in, how many interviews they may expect to go through, that the process, because it's lengthy and very process-driven, may take a month to a month and a half to get them through meeting all the individuals. You can help set the stage for what's to come. And if there is a heavy emphasis on drug testing and there is a problem on their end and they don't want to discuss it, guess what happened when they don't show up for the interview? But another thing is that phone screen can serve as the first interview and should serve as the first interview, by the way, and then helps to relax them so that when you get them for the live interview, they're less inclined to have their guard up. Because when people come in for a first interview and they never met anybody, they got the happy face on. They do the happy dance. You know, they got the shoes shine. They got the hair combed. They got, you know, their suit just back from the cleaners and their shirt pressed. And they look really, really good. But that may not be how they live day to day, but that's the front they put on. And so the more you interview a person after the second or third interview, you'll find they start to let their guard down and their true colors shine through. So that phone screen can really serve as a process for breaking that down and helping them kind of reduce the that need to kind of put on a front. And like I mentioned, I never interview off the resume. It's just not a strong way to do things, because that person's probably got the resume memorized. So I'll just give you an example of, you know, five or six questions that I would ask. One of them would be, I always like to ask, why did you respond to our ad? it tells me whether or not they're just shopping, because if they say, well, I don't remember which ad I sent to, it tells me that they weren't very strong in their desire to come to work for my organization. The next thing I'm going to ask them is, what do you know about our organization, to find out how much research they might have done or somebody works there. I want to kind of find out more about the person right now and if there's a fit. And then I would just ask them real quickly, how would you describe the depth and breadth of your experience? That's a pretty broad-reaching question, but it helps me kind of get a gauge for who they are and what they're looking for, just kind of off the cuff. And then I always ask, why are you looking to leave your current employer? It gives me a little indication. I'm going to probe for that when I interview them on their other employers and why they left those employers, to see if I see consistency in there or initiative services. I'm also going to make sure I ask in the phone screen, and I can't tell you how many times I've asked people what the salary and pay range is when I debrief with my clients about job fit. I always ask this question in the phone screen. It's critical. I ask them, what does your current compensation package look like? I never ask them how much money they want to make. That just sets up the stage, because you'll always get that from them. They'll say, well, money's not important, job security and a good company and a good working environment and a good culture and yada, yada, yada. But the fact of the matter is, money's a motivator. And you're looking to make sure that there's a good fit between what they want and what they expect and what you have to offer and where you're at. And so I always ask them what their current compensation package looks like, because I want to make sure that we're in the same ballpark, that I don't bring them in and we're so far out of range it's not even funny. And I don't let them give me that. I might let them make the statement, but I always come back and say, well, that may be well and good, but I said, what I asked you was, what does your current compensation package look like? Is it salary bonus? What's your base salary? What's your bonus looks like? What's your comp package look like? And then I might ask one more question, such as, what's the depth of your training and background? Or if it's a salesperson, what's the depth of your sales experience? I'm going to ask some basic fundamental questions that helps me size up that individual, and help me kind of get a gauge on kind of where we're at and set the stage for that first interview. So I don't like to use the resume to interview off of, and I like to have more of an ad lib, because I want to see how well they ad lib when I call them at home in the evening and catch them off guard. Then can I really converse with them, and how comfortable are they on the phone with me in terms of conversing and articulating and expressing themselves? So that phone screen, I think, is a huge piece that can help you eliminate people right off the bat. So as I spoke earlier, you've got to start to have then your ability to have some type of structured interview. And in that structured interview, there's got to be a way then to look at the competencies and the behaviors. So we start to identify and stay away from hiring against education or skills or ability, or being impressed that the person's got an MBA. I'm never impressed with somebody who's got an MBA. I'm just not, because anybody can go to school, go to class, take the classes, get the course, get their grades, and get an MBA. But that doesn't mean they can think beyond their nose, and doesn't mean that they're hard driving, hard charging. Just might mean that just curious about getting educated, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think there's sometimes an overemphasis played on that. But the behavior-based part and the competency part is huge, because now we're going to try to establish a set of competencies. And as we look for a set of competencies, some of the organizations may use, there's a very, very pronounced organization, I won't name names, but they use a behavioral-based interviewing approach, which is good, but it's not enough. And the fact is, when you look at a behavioral-based approach, the behavior-based approach has an overemphasis and over-reliance on looking, trying to understand the behavior, but oftentimes the interviewers are not experienced or maybe not as trained as much as they should be, and that behavioral-based approach is oftentimes too subjective. In other words, there's nothing that helps quantify the rating scale per se. And what I mean by that is that what we build into our process is, yes, we build in a structured interview, and we do build in behavior-based questions, and we do build in performance-based questions, but we also build in a rating sheet that helps rate the individual on a scale of 1 to 5. And so as an example, in this one particular interview set that we developed for a client, there were 7 questions that looked at from a personal standpoint, and then a rating scale of 1 to 5 on that section. Each section has a rating scale. So rating a person as a 1 says the interviewee does not have any ambitions, goals, or directions. They just want a job. They left their former employer with no notice and no reason. Rating them as a 3 would say interview has an idea of what they want for their future, but still unsure. They're interested in the company because they have heard it's a good place to work and have some relevant experience to position. And number five, it says interviewee definitely has ambitions, goals, and directions, looking to improve themselves, wanting more responsibility, and they're looking for a challenge, and they've researched the company extensively. It gives us an idea that says, how do we go about, if I've got multiple raters, and this person is going to be interviewed by three different people with the same basic scorecard, and three different people rate them, are they all rating them against the same criteria, and do they all understand what the objective is? So as we rate them for personal and then specific job qualifications that comes off the PAQ, we can rate them for teamwork and conflict in this particular job. Decisiveness is another section. Work standards is another. And then there's kind of an overall wrap up. But there's five sections of competencies built into this one job classification. This is for technicians for a client. But as we look at for salespeople then, the competencies we have for salespeople are achievement orientation initiative, work standards, conceptual and analytical skills, selling and influencing skills, negotiation skills, communication skills, both listening and written, adaptability, and planning and organization. So, and then there's specific questions that we use in each of those areas that has anywhere from 5 to 8 questions that then drive at the ability to ask questions around that competency that are behavior-based. So you're looking at both the behavior and you're looking at the competencies and tying it in with a rating scale so that you can really look to say, rather than to allow myself to get sucked into just making a snap decision, I'm going to really go to an in-depth interview. The problem lies in that this interview is not designed to be done in an hour, as most interviews that I've seen typically last. And that is because most interviewers are uncomfortable really asking the hard questions. So as you look to get into the depth of those that interview process, it's the ability then to have some type of format that keeps you on track and in a pattern, so to speak, so that everyone is comparing a rating and has the ability to have and understand what the rating scale is supposed to look like. So when we get down to the end of the day, we can start to sum up. So does the assessment results match with the person that we see? Does the interview check with what we see in the resume? Does the reference checking process? And as we look at creating what we call a balanced scorecard, can we make it a better job of our hiring process? So as we get ready to take our last and final break into this particular segment, we'll come back. Again, you're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. You can check us out on the web at www.theg.com. Or write me at rick@theg.com. I'll be glad to answer your questions. We'll see you after the break.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio. Voice America Business Network.
If you currently or aspire to serve on a board or work in a leadership capacity for or with a public or nonprofit organization, where can you turn to get the best advice and practices? How about Leadership Matters with Dr. G? Our program discusses challenges facing both public and nonprofit leaders. Don't miss these practical solutions and tips to enhance your leadership style and effectiveness. Leadership Matters with Dr. G airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. Do you have a question or comment about today's program? Please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back to the show. As we wrap up this final segment, as I mentioned earlier, it's tough to be able to kind of cram into an hour what goes into our typical one-day workshop called A Strategic View of Hiring. But that workshop gets into the depth of the things we're talking about in this particular show and also blends into what we talked about last show, too, and that is using assessments in the process of helping to validate. So if I've got a strong job description and I am able to interview and create my interview process geared around what I'm looking for in a job, and I've got a strong ability to assess an individual from an interview process and quantify them in terms of kind of the grading scale, if you will, and how well they did in the interview, and I have a strong assessment process that looks at the assessments to support that, and those things line up, then what's left is my ability to check references. But one of the things that I like to do in the interview process, which really throws individuals a huge curve, is what I call the supervisor interview. And it's what I use to help look at that drives my ability to go check references, or I should say validate references. But in addition to having a structured interview, I also have an interview outline that I created that really starts to look at making sure I cover all the things that I want to accomplish based on the job. And I'm going to do this for at least three of the jobs that they've held besides the behavioral-based interview. So this means that I may have that individual for 2 hours, or in some cases I've interviewed people for 3 hours, depending upon the level and the executive. A salesperson now typically, if I'm asked to interview for a salesperson, it's anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours if I interview that salesperson. If I'm looking at a technician, it's usually about an hour. But if I'm looking at an executive, a plant manager, VP of sales, president, it's a 2.5 to 3 hour interview that I'll go through on top of having the assessment results. So I might have that individual, for those clients that are local that send people into our office, I might have that individual for 3 hours of an interview and 3 hours of testing. They might be tied up the better part of the day in terms of our analysis and evaluation, but we're doing a deep dive on that individual's capabilities. But getting back to the interview outline and the supervisor, one of the things I'll ask them is that if I were to call your current supervisor, oh, by the way, are they still there? And do you have them as a listed on your references? It's kind of a way that I kind of drive the reference checking process, but I would say, you know, tell me how your performance appraisals have gone. They might tell me I haven't had any, or they might tell me I've had stellar performance appraisals, but I want to ask them what kind of performance appraisals they've had in terms of their interaction with their supervisor. And then I say, if I were to contact your supervisor, what would they tell me about your strengths and weaknesses and what they've done in terms of their recommendations around coaching or areas of improvement for you, that if I were to call them, what would they tell me? And I'm trying to put that onus away from the individual, or away from the individual's perception, to the perception of the supervisor, and then make them think, if nothing else, that I am in fact going to check references and pursue that and drive that. So as I look then at how I get that person to open up, I want to make sure, is that supervisor still there? If not, do they know where they went? To make sure I've got permission to contact them, that they've got their name, rank, and serial number, and phone number, and where they've gone to, or what the depth of that relationship was. And then I'm going to ask them how they would rate their supervisor's strengths and weaknesses in terms of their interaction. I want to find out more about that individual and how they work together on that whole equation. So that it tends to throw them a little bit of a curve. It makes them a little uncomfortable, but it sets the stage for me telling them that I am going to check references. Another way to set the stage for helping them know I'm going to check references is very right up front in the phone screen, because I will tell them up front in the phone screen, or suggest if I'm working with an organization to help them do that, is in the phone screen, say, look, our reference checking process is pretty strict and pretty stringent. We're going to ask you to have a list of references of all the supervisors you work for with phone numbers and addresses so we can contact them as part of that phone screen. I'm going to be looking to quantify accomplishments so that I can use that ability to validate information when I go to check references. But in the interview outline, as I drive through that and I look at that individual, I'm trying to find out what their supervisors thought of them, what they thought of themselves, how those job descriptions line up with performance, and see if I can't then ferret out the performance so that when I now move to call the supervisor, guess what I'm able to do? I'm able to talk to the supervisor and say, one of the things that John Jones mentioned was that you and he got along phenomenally well Or I can say, you and I, he said that you guys seem to be at odds at times, but he thought you were a good employee. Or I can say one of the things that John Jones said was, you know, he said he delivered X, Y, and Z. You know, is this in fact true, a true statement about how he goes about, has gone about his work or his performance? And I can get some of the quantifying information, and it can even help pinpoint some of the perhaps negative information. The one of the references that I did for a client had a lady that was being looked at as the quality manager. And on her reference sheet, and we have a specially designed reference sheet that's separate from the normal job application sheet that comes in. And that's a whole other subject we could get in on. But anyway, she filled out the reference sheet. She had six references on there. Of the six references, five were former plant managers, and one was a former HR manager, yet she was quality manager in all five of those plants. And one of the things that was discerned on her assessment results was she may be a little bit light in her ability to solve problems. She wasn't all that strong fundamentally in terms of her decision-making ability that was revealed in our test results. And so when I looked at the references, and she had listed five previous plant managers and one HR manager, it struck me funny that she didn't list all six plant managers. So I went ahead and called the organization, but I did not call the HR manager she had listed. I literally called the plant manager and found out that she didn't actually report to the plant manager, but reported to the operations manager. But nonetheless, in talking with the plant manager, I said, you know, one of the things that we see we like about this gal, and I always start with the positives first. And then I went into, and the other thing that I said, the other thing is we have some concerns that she may not be strong enough for her decision-making or even problem-solving ability to really decipher things that go on at a true quality level on the plant floor. And this plant manager said to me, he said, well, that's exactly why we fired her, because in 1 year she really hadn't solved one problem that was put in front of her. Hence the ability to look at assessment work, interview criteria, be able to check references or validate information that you think you see. And so if you set the stage and you've got a really strong, robust hiring selection process, you can eliminate a lot of dead weight and a lot of bring in much better candidates. So as we look at the program we've created called the Strategic View of Hiring, it really then tries to help organizations incorporate the full range of having a very strong job process, that when it comes to being able to defend yourself in court and defend the litigation process against discrimination, you've got a very strong process that you've followed. It started by a very strong job analysis using the PAQ, which has been a highly defensible instrument in court in terms of job competencies and job qualifications. You've gone through a structured interview process that ties in based on the job at hand and what you're trying to get done. You've gone through an assessment process. You've checked references. And if you've got a really strong, robust program, which is one of the things we try to help organizations create, it's the ability to keep themselves healthy and legal and do a better job of bringing in the right candidates to put the right people on the bus and in the right seats. It's kind of our, not kind of our, it is our approach to helping organizations build a much stronger group of talent and manage the whole talent manager process. So as we wrap up today's show, we were talking about kind of selection process and what goes into a strong selection process. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, with the Executive Group. We've been in business 20 years. You can check us out at the web at www.theeg.com. And if you'd like any references or an outline of the show or some of the material that we've talked about today for examples, please don't hesitate to give us a call, and we look forward to having you on next week's show, and have a great week.
Thank you again for tuning in to What's Leadership Got to Do with It? Please join your host, Rick Thiemann, again next Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.